You're listening to World Class from the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University. We bring expertise on international affairs from Stanford's campus straight to you. I'm Michael McFaul, host of World Class and director of the Freeman Spogli Institute. Back in December 2018, Alex Stamos, the former chief security officer at Facebook and the current William J. Perry Fellow at FSI's Center for International Security and Cooperation, joined me on World Class. We talked about Russia propaganda efforts. We talked about 2016 and the run-up to what they were doing on various platforms, in fact, in the 2016 election. Since then, Alex, the Mueller report has come out, and we just wanted to follow up, you being front and center in a lot of that drama, to get your kind of reaction to what was there and to talk about that history now that we have a little more fidelity as to what they have discovered. Let's just start with the first big, broad question. What was surprising to you that was in the Mueller report, and what was surprising to you that was not in the Mueller report?
Thanks for having me back, Mike. Mueller report, I was pleasantly surprised by the thoroughness of the investigation into what happened online. I was really happy to see that Mueller's team did a good job of disambiguating between the activity from the GRU and the other intelligence services and the online activity of the Internet Research Agency.
Right.
That's been a sticking point for me in the public conversation, is I think things get kind of blurred up. And so the fact that
Help our listeners understand the differences. They're in the Mueller report, but you know this material better than anybody.
Right. So. And so as Mueller laid out, there was an online troll campaign, had no hacking component. It was really about driving divisive narratives. That is the Internet Research Agency. And he hinted to other possible organizations that were names were blacked out. That is separate from the GRU activity, where there was direct hacks against John Podesta, the DNC, and that information was then used to manipulate the overall conversation, both in the mass media and then also on social media. And so I was glad to see that they pulled out and they spent an equal amount of time on both.
Right.
One thing I was surprised to see is that the Mueller team found no evidence of coordination there. That
Right.
was something we had always kind of wondered when we were looking at the stuff at Facebook. We were looking at a tiny little bit of the information available.
Right.
And one of our big questions was always, how are these teams working together? Which actually was kind of shocking to me. And as the Russia expert, maybe you can explain this better. But it does seem that a lot of the 2016 campaign were these organizations working semi-independently, perhaps to a shared goal of weakening the United States, perhaps to a shared goal of supporting Donald Trump, but without a lot of coordination. And that was actually kind of surprising to me, that you would have these free agents doing this work.
And there's no evidence of coordination between the GRU, which, just to remind everybody, is the intelligence arm of the Ministry of Defense, and the Internet Research Agency, that it was set up by a friend of Putin's but did not have coordination. Were you surprised of the, well, I don't even want to characterize it, I want you to characterize it, the coordination or the lack thereof between Americans, and in particular what Internet Research Agency was doing on the one hand, and then the coordination between the WikiLeaks and the stolen data?
Yeah, I was. I thought there would be more linkages there. I thought there was going to be more evidence that if you looked at the calendar of when WikiLeaks released, of, you know, GRU turning the data over to WikiLeaks, the creation of the DC Leaks persona, which is the kind of in-house WikiLeaks for the GRU, that you would be able
to. They created from scratch. We now know that.
We know they created from scratch.
Did you know that back in
I did know that. So
that, oh, you did? Okay.
This is actually
interesting.
I'm glad the Mueller report's out, because there's been a lot of things bouncing around my head that have either been not appropriate for me to talk about or would probably have violated U.S. law, since they have to do with people's personal communications that are protected by law. And so some of the history of the GRU stuff, we actually discovered at Facebook and turned over to the FBI. So some of the evidence behind the DC Leaks personas, I believe, is what our team found at Facebook and turned over to the special counsel voluntarily. The other couple of things that I wasn't able to talk about that I'm glad are now out in the Mueller report. One is that Mueller mentions a little bit, and I think this is one of those things that's behind the black bars, is Mueller does mention that there are instances of the Internet Research Agency reaching out to Americans who were related to the victims of police shootings. And so there's now evidence that the IRA was going above and beyond creating divisive narratives, but also trying to enlist Americans to do it on their behalf. And in this case, taking advantage of the pain of parents who have lost their children.
That's details incredible.
Aren't in the doc, right? But there's there is some footnotes that haven't been erased. And then the other part is that DC Leaks, the other side, GRU, had reached out to American journalists and had planted stories. So they had effectively acted as on background or deep background sources for these journalists who have still not admitted that. And that's one of the things actually that I was hoping would happen after the Mueller report came out, is now that Mueller has said DC Leaks is GRU, that we would hear from those journalists saying, I was a target of DC Leaks. I wrote a story because they sent me information. Here's what I'm going to do differently. And that reckoning has not happened yet. Everybody's kind of keeping quiet. And the Mueller report does block out the names of the journalists who are affected. So right. For now, it looks like they're in the clear.
But back to DC Leaks for a minute. So it sounds like you were aware or you had a theory that that might be the Russians in 2016, or did that come later?
No, in 2016, we had pretty strong attribution of that to GRU. So
how did you do that? I'm just curious, to the extent you can talk about it.
Yeah, so our team, going into the 2016 election, we had this intelligence team mostly staffed from ex-US law enforcement and intelligence agencies.
Okay.
So ex-NSA, ex-CIA,
getting ready
ex-FBI.
For 2016, very well, explicitly, no. Or just generally worrying about these kinds of issues for Facebook?
Yeah, just in general, this team's job was to understand the use of the platform by adversary nations to cause harm.
Got it.
One of our mistakes going into 2016 is our definition of kind of online cyber attacks by governments was restricted to the tight definition of breaking into people's accounts, breaking into people's computers, stealing information. This team, my intel team, we were not looking for the propaganda activity.
Right.
We happened upon the DC Leaks information because we had been tracking the number of accounts that we had attributed to GRU that we had decided not to shut down because there's a lot of value in having accounts that you know belong to an adversary to see
to
what
watch
they're
them.
Interested
yes.
in.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is, this was always a
That's
constant
battle.
That's
how the FBI works with agents in the country, by the way. They,
right.
They follow them because they want to understand their yeah. operations, right?
Right. And I
So
expect,
you were doing that.
Right. And, you know, like I said, the people we're hiring are usually ex-law enforcement, ex-IC,
right.
so they are bringing the same kind of ideas from them. But I think just like with the FBI, there's this risk of how long do you let these people operate and then watch them do something, or do you take action to kick them off the platform? Now, in our case, taking action is much less effective than, say, arresting a spy on the street or a
right.
potential terrorist, right?
Right?
That person's arrested, they can't come back. In the Facebook context, you're really just shutting down somebody's account. They're going to figure out that you figured it out. They're going to come back with better operational security.
Right.
And so the ethical conundrum is a little less intense than it perhaps is for the FBI watching a potential terrorist, for example. But anyway, we were watching that activity. We had these accounts that we had pretty high confidence that we could attribute to GRU. They had been involved in activity around the World Anti-Doping Agency.
Right.
They'd been involved in activity in the Ukraine. And so that's a pretty good indication of
what
organizations are going to do that. That's not Israeli
right.
or Chinese or Iranian, clearly.
Right.
We could tie the kind of offensive accounts through some shared technical infrastructure to the DC Leaks accounts that were created. Now, for a long time, DC Leaks didn't do anything, right? So they created these, they backstopped these identities. They created this fake organization. They set up a website off of Facebook. And then they set up accounts on other social media, and they didn't really do anything. But then, as the Mueller report discusses, they went active, both by privately reaching out to journalists and then eventually dumping out a bunch of this information publicly.
Which then later got picked up by WikiLeaks, or was that a separate data dump? How,
yeah.
Explain the relationship between what the GRU created,
mm-hmm.
the DC Leaks and Guccifer 2.0. Say a little bit about what we now know that account and that
right.
persona to be. And its relationship with WikiLeaks?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. There's now three personas really in play.
Okay.
There's the two personas that are completely controlled by GRU. And so that is DC Leaks, and then also, like you said, Guccifer 2.0, which was the persona that was kind of hastily put together, it seems, to justify the leaking of certain information. And that was pretty quickly figured out by some smart journalists who had, Guccifer was a real hacker, Guccifer 1.0, who was Romanian, who was dumping out some information, was pretty famous, had a nice following on InfoSec social media. And so they were trying to claim that they were also Romanian hackers. And one very smart journalist said, okay, well, great, I'm going to find a real Romanian speaker to talk to you. And it was very clear to real Romanian speakers that whoever was doing this was doing it via Google Translate. And so Guccifer 2.0 had been outed pretty early. The Mueller report doesn't really speak to the motivations here, but it's possible DC Leaks is also a response to that for them to try to create personas that are better backstopped right, than the Guccifer 2.0, which had been uncovered pretty quickly. And so you have the Guccifer and DC Leaks personas interacting with WikiLeaks, and then WikiLeaks doing their own dumps, but without a lot of evidence that they knew exactly where it's coming from. That is also perhaps a significant chunk of the redactions are, right. As you know, Assange is now under indictment. And so there is a big section there that perhaps has more information on the communications between WikiLeaks and the Russians to tell whether the WikiLeaks people should have known for sure that they were being used by Russian intel.
Do you think it's just coincidence that Assange has been arrested after this came out, or...
Don't think that's a coincidence. Obviously, his time's probably been running out in the Ecuadorian embassy no matter what.
Right.
He keeps on breaking the rules, right?
Right.
They basically said you can't mess with elections while you're in here, and he keeps on breaking those rules. I think it's got to be related that effectively the Mueller report gave the U.S. government probably a chance to go lay this out to the Ecuadorians.
And they finally said yes.
Right. We are going to publish this.
Right.
This is going to be a very detailed accounting of how WikiLeaks was part of an attack against American democracy. Do you still feel like you want to shield them?
Right.
You know, you're the diplomat, but I'm guessing that you would think that that's something that most countries would react, even if they're a little bit anti-American, would not react positively to.
That sounds very plausible to me.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the second question about what you said a little bit about it, but I want to dig into it and even some things beyond the platforms, the pieces you thought were going to be in there that were not, things you thought you were going to learn that you still have questions about.
Yeah, so we still don't have a good accounting of what was the overall Russian plan and what was the kind of the coordination communication look like on the back end.
Right.
For those of us on the unclassified side, it is still not clear who is driving the agenda of the Internet Research Agency.
Right.
And what kind of help are they getting? And that, I think, is actually going to be critically important in 2020, because from the data I've seen, the IRA has gotten much better about covering their tracks.
Right.
Since... you know, we caught them in 2017. And one of the interesting questions would be, are they doing so organically, or are they doing so because they're getting help from GRU or FSB or SVR, one of the different Russian intel? And we don't. And none of that was in the Mueller report.
Right.
The other thing that I wish was in the Mueller report, and I understand because it's not really his remit, but it's something we're really missing, which is there was not an exploration of the coordination failure between the private and the public sector.
Yeah.
So we made mistakes in the private sector, for sure. We were not looking for the propaganda actors. We had too fine of a definition, too narrow of a definition of what was like a cyber actor working for the Russian government. We were too slow to put that team together and figure it out. And so we didn't figure it all out until after the election.
Right.
Right. The same failures, it seems, happened in the U.S. government.
Right.
But it's hard to tell because all of that's happening on the classified side. And so without the equivalent of a 9/11 commission,
right,
with clearances and subpoena power and the ability to look on the classified side, it's hard to know whether did the government miss this as well, or did the government know all about this but had rules that would not let them
talk to us
and stop it.
Right.
And that's I think a critical question that needs to be asked inside the government, because there are two different outcomes for that. Either you have to I've actually been reading the 9/11 commission report a bit to kind of put the Mueller report in context. And one of the things it talks about is how the idea of using airplanes as weapons had been previewed in a number of red team exercises inside the government. It had been part of a, you know, Tom Clancy novel. There was no institutional imagination, right? Institutionally, the government did not have the imagination to look forward. And I think that that happened again, that institutional imagination existed neither with us in the social media companies or in the government. And that's something we got to figure out.
Yes.
Is how do we get that imagination to be built into that relationship? How do we figure out what is next in 2020?
Right.
Red team that out together, you know, think about the possible risks and then put protections in place beforehand. Or if you can't stop stuff, at least be looking for those kinds of abuse so you can react very quickly. And I think that's missing from the Mueller report. And again, it's not really...
It wasn't his assignment.
Not his assignment, but it's something the country needs.
Well, I think that's a great point you make, because like you said, he wasn't commissioned to write a 911 bipartisan commission report. He was looking for criminal activity related to what the Russians did. But that means that we didn't interrogate what the U.S. government did. I mean, you mentioned on the intelligence side, but there were lots of decisions that the Obama administration as a whole and specific pieces that didn't get interrogated. It's on my mind because I'm teaching a course on foreign policy decision making right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday, we did the decision to invade Iraq, and our guest speaker was Condoleezza Rice.
That's a nice little Stanford advertisement right there.
Stay tuned here at World Class for people like that. It's fantastic.
class. We have people coming in for big decisions, Obama, Bush, and then the Trump administration will have H.R. McMaster on North Korea. And we'll get him for the podcast, by the way, to talk about that once that I hear what he has to say. But she points out something very related to what you're saying about September 11th. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the imagination. We didn't have the infrastructure in place to even deal with those kinds of threats. And afterwards, that's why we have Homeland Security and we have the DNI. And, you know, there were structural reforms. People can talk about how flawed they were that came out of that report and that experience. And it is striking to me that if you look at this experience, which was also an attack on our sovereignty, a lot less change because we haven't even interrogated a lot of what happened.
I mean, I'd argue we've had no structural reforms.
Right. That's so, what I mean. Right.
Yeah. Good. You've had, and I think that's a good way you're putting it, right? Like the DHS, DNI, people can argue how much they like those organizations.
Right.
But you can't say that we did not reinvent the U.S. government's defensive capability.
Right.
But in this case, the structural change would have to be in the relationship between the private and public sectors.
Right.
And it would have to be between the private sector companies to get them to work together. And none of that's happened. Right. You've had Facebook make decisions on their own. Google's made decisions on their own. The FBI has a foreign influence task force. DHS has an election security task force. The FBI and DHS task force are pretty loosely coupled from what I've seen from the outside. The private company task force are extremely loosely coupled.
Right.
Those companies are still competitors. Their CEOs are still hissing at each other from stages while doing product announcements. And so there certainly has not been the kind of change that you would want to see.
Well, let's talk about what changes have taken place. And then the next time we have you back in a few weeks, we'll talk about the changes that need to be taken place.
So
obviously there has been some changes. Let's start with the companies. I mean, tell us a few things that they have done differently now that they've endured 2016 to make them more prepared for 2020.
Right. So the changes that the companies can fall into two categories.
Okay.
There's the operational changes, which is really human beings implementing rules. And then there's the product changes, which are a little more subtle.
Okay.
So the operational changes, now that this is known as a problem, that team that I had built up to study online actors. While I was still at Facebook, we created a subset of the team whose entire job was to look at propaganda actors. And that has only grown and grown. And since I've left, they've hired people in a number of regions and different languages to add to the capability of that team, which is great. And one of the big policy changes is, the truth is Facebook did not have a rule that caught the Russian activity in 2016. The challenge here for the social media companies is they generally make content moderation decisions on a single piece of content, right? So if you tweet, I don't like this person, this is their home address, go protest outside their house, that's against the rules of all the major social media companies.
Right.
A moderator can look at that tweet and say, this is doxing, this is bad, I'm punishing at McFall.
Okay.
The problem is for the Russian activity is the individual pieces of content are not against any rules. It is okay to create a pro Black Lives Matter post saying that there's too much police brutality.
Right.
It's okay to create kind of a joking post with a picture of Satan and Jesus arm wrestling over the election, right?
Okay.
Like, those are okay kinds of expression. What is not okay is when those things are done in a coordinated manner by fake accounts run by dozens of people who are trying to look like thousands.
Right.
But that is a much more subtle thing to catch.
And
so that's one of the big changes at the companies, is that now they have rules around that and they have teams and technology looking for that kind of coordination, which is not the kind of problem that exists for these other content moderation issues. And so that's a good operational change.
Uh-huh.
All of that's voluntary. None of it is legally required,
which is
one of the, and the outcome of that is, one, the big companies that are doing it could just change their minds if the pressure is taken off. But also there are hundreds or thousands of companies, both in the online advertising ecosystem.
Great point.
And
we always think about two or three, but there's
about two or three, but there's a lot.
Right.
And most of them are not doing any of this work. We also have, this is one of the issues of the Mueller report, that I don't think there's anything this team could have done about it. But the Mueller report is significantly hurt by the fact that there's a data sampling error here of the data about what happened online. Most of it comes from the teams at those companies that found it themselves.
Yes.
So when you're reading about Russians on YouTube, that's coming from the Google Intel team.
That was very striking reading the report.
Right.
It's all
self-reported. So think about all of the companies that do not have ex-NSA Russian speakers who can go work on this kind of
stuff, which is
basically all of them outside of Google, Facebook, and Twitter.
Right.
Right? Pinterest, Reddit, obviously like the Chans and kind of the alt-right sites.
Right.
There's a ton of people who have not reported any data to to the government. And that is another issue we got to think about, is who is responsible for the companies that don't want to take responsibility themselves, or even if they do, don't have the wherewithal to do so correctly.
Right.
Right. And so there's been the operational changes. The product changes that have been made have mostly been made around advertising. And so the big companies, again, like the Facebooks, Google, and Twitters, have come up with rules around political advertising that they now enforce transparency, and they require you to prove you're an American to run an ad here. Uh-huh. And I think they are slowly rolling that out to other jurisdictions, that you have to be part of Country X to run a ad in Country X's elections.
Right.
Again, all voluntary, not backed up by any law. Those companies can decide, we don't want to do it. And then only two or three companies out of the 1,000 companies that sell online ads have done anything. And so that's where we need regulation to standardize it, to make it not voluntary, to push the companies to go a little bit further.
Right.
And there's been a bunch of transparency changes around ads, but there have not been large increases in transparency around organic content. Right. And this is where another poorly timed incident has really hurt us, which is the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal has made it very difficult for academics on the outside to get data from the companies, because that is rooted in the misuse of data by an academic researcher who violated his agreements. And so it is not a good time to go to those companies and say, hey, I want to do some research with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, you know, our colleague Nate Persily is working really hard on finding good legal structures for this.
Right.
But that is something that is moving very slowly, in my opinion. And I don't think we're going to be in a great place for 2020 for external academic research into this activity that's not advertising,
right,
into the organic activity. And while advertising is important, the vast majority of Russian activity on Facebook was organic. Not paid, was organic.
Yes, and people need to constantly be reminded of that, because I think there's a perception that it was on this paid side. So
I think what happened is we had announced a bit of the organic stuff that we had found. A number of politicians were harping on Facebook, do you have any ads? Our answer was, at this point, we don't. When we had to go change and say, well, we have found ads now, they made a huge deal of it.
Right.
But they made a deal of it because it was a great media talking point, not because it was actually the most impactful
component. That's a component. Great observation.
Right. It's what played well on MSNBC, to be honest.
Right. Not by me as not an MSNBC contributor, but yes, by those others. And as you hinted at earlier in your remarks, Mueller has no prescriptions. That wasn't his assignment either, even though the 911 Commission, they had giant chapters on prescriptions. And to that topic, we want to have you back and go through it and talk about what needs to be done before 2020.
Sounds great, Mike.
Thanks for being here, Alex.
Thank you, sir.
You've been listening to World Class from the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University. If you like this episode, please review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners to find the show. And be sure to subscribe to stay up to date on what's happening in the world and why.